Hey there, welcome to SaaS Inbound Podcast. I'm your host, Anna Dana, Head of Growth at SaaS Group, serial acquirer buying wonderful SaaS businesses to take them to the next level. And here I chat with inspiring founders and experts to get an inside scoop on how they made their business a success. And today with me is Thomas, CEO and founder of Gentis, the most powerful server-side tracking platform. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Sure, anytime. Well, I'm really glad you're here. And, you know, we'll get to server-side tracking, obviously. But first, you know, let's get to you and, you know, your story and how you got to do it in the first place.
Yeah, of course, happy to share. So original, my roots is software development. So I'm coming from the technology side, coming from the product side, was a software developer for many, many, many years in my younger years. And I joined an online marketing agency around 2010. And that was for me the first time when I got in touch with data more and more, and where I found out how beautiful it is to connect technology and software development and data. And I founded a data analytics agency in 2014. This was and is, this agency is still existing, is very successful. And it was around 2016, 2017, when we realized that we had some really, really bad issues with the data quality. So data quality was going down. And that was exactly the time when, for example, GDPR was the first time on the plate, and we tried to find solution for that for our customers, and that you can think about if you're in the consulting business and the data quality is not as expected, then that's really bad news. And so we tried to find solutions. We didn't find a solution on the market, and because many of those guys in this agency were software developers as well, we said, okay, let's do it by ourselves, like software developers loves to do. And that was the beginning of Gentis, kind of 2016, 2017. So it was never planned as a product. It was neither planned as a startup or scale up. It was really of solving issues on the customer side. And after some years of getting more seriously with this kind of new technology, in 2019, we were addressed by some business angels and some other founders who asked if we would like to make a startup out of it. And my first reaction was no, obviously not. Why I should do that? I have a very successful and ongoing agency, data analytics agency. But at the end, after I understood what that means and how much potential is in this new technology and how we could use this potential, I said, oh, that's a good idea. Maybe we should do it. And long story short, we founded Gentis in 2020 with first decision was this transition of the technology from the old company to the new company. So we are five founders. And since 2020, we're working, or the first step was making a product out of the technology. I remember the first days we tried to, you know, sell it to the first customers, and everybody asked me, Thomas, show me, let me log in, etc. And I always needed to say, there is no login. It's just a black screen with white lines of text. There is this technology, it's not a product. So it was making a product out of it and obviously selling to the first 10 customers, then to the next 50, to the next 100. And yeah, it was really cool journey to see how this product really could enter the market. So in the meanwhile, we are around 60 people, more than 150 customers, more in the enterprise section. It's all about data quality and server-side tracking.
All right. Okay. Super cool story. I've heard a lot of, you know, stories here of coming out of the agency into product world, but you guys decided to keep both. And since there are five co-founders, I'm thinking somebody's responsible for the agency, somebody's responsible for the product, or how does it work?
No, that was, thanks God, that was not possible. So obviously the first business angels who invested to the new company, they were super strict and said, Thomas, you need to separate both worlds. So the agency, I am the 100% owner of the agency, and the agency has nothing to do with Gentis. The name of the agency is WebRocket, by the way, not to call it all the time agency. And these worlds are totally separated. So I am part of shareholder of Gentis and 100% shareholder of WebRocket, the agency. And there was kind of an overlap at the beginning because it's not that easy to find a general manager for a company like WebRocket. So we had this agreement with the business angels that for 12 months, I was allowed to be both general manager of Gentis and WebRocket. But within the first 12 months, I need to find a replacement for me as a general manager of the agency. So, and there is now obviously a new general manager. So I'm totally out of business and operations of the agency. I'm fully in 120% like every founder at Gentis. But these two worlds are totally separated.
Okay, I see. How was that transition for you from the agency kind of workflow into product?
It was absolutely new world. I mean, it was like, you know, as in an agency, everything is super slow. I mean, it's consulting business. That means you generate value by things you are saying and by talking and by meetings and by visiting the customers, and you never really get a value feedback. It's about what you're saying, maybe can have an impact, maybe not. Maybe you're just smart and know how you say something, and that's the reason why you're successful as a consultant. In a startup, especially in SaaS and product startup, I mean, you get immediately the feedback from the market if your product really brings value or not. So that was obviously one of the big differences. And I would say the second one, as I already mentioned, is speed. I mean, from day one at Gentis, we really try to decide fast, to act fast, to execute fast, to learn fast. That's absolutely not the case in an agency. In an agency, you try to build a stable business and do step after step. And I have the feeling sometimes at Gentis, we're doing 20 steps at once and then try to find out which five steps were the right one and which 15 steps were for learning. So speed and the general idea of how to make business is super different.
All right. So talking about speed now, Sifton called you one of the 15 fastest growing startups in Central Europe. So you must be doing something right there. So where is this growth coming from?
That's a very good question. Very often we don't know by ourselves. But what I can share with you is, I mean, what helped us a lot is based on our background of this agency and that we started to build this technology very close to customers. I mean, we did something you can read at nearly every startup book that really put the customer in the center. And we really take it seriously. It's not just, you know, that we write it to our website. It is really that we say, okay, we have our tier one clients, which is kind of the center of our ideal customer profile. And at the end, I learned as a CEO that one of my main responsibilities is to understand, we're always talking about the market, but who is the market? It's really your top 10, 15 customers. And I need to be super close and need to understand the needs, the fears, obviously, their motivation and what they expect from a software like Gentis. And I would say this is what we're doing really kind of in every step of the company, that we put the customer in the center, customer or partners. And this helped us a lot to scale and to develop new technology early enough. So it's never that you have a technology in your hands and then you're doing the next 15 years business with this technology. In our case, it was server-side tracking, and back to 2020, it was really cool because we were the first one. And around 10, 11 months after we go to the market, Google announced a product, server-side tracking. So that was for us, okay, maybe we need to now be carefully, maybe we need to change something. And obviously, and then we have a value proposition very much on the legal side, because in 2021, there was an announcement of the Austrian Data Protection Authority that kind of Google Analytics out of Europe is not legal anymore, which was a booster for us because with server-side tracking with Gentis, it was legal again. And we lost this value proposition in 2020 when there was an adequacy decision, and we needed to rethink what is our position, what is our value proposition. And early enough, we said, okay, we need more uniqueness, we need more urgency in our product, and that was the reason why we started in 2022 to work on something what we call today's synthetic users. So again, we are on the speed side. You need to think 2 years in advance. If you think, okay, maybe in 2 years we're losing our value proposition, we need to start working today on new solutions, that we're not having this kind of gap in traction in business, etc. And I think this is one of the cornerstones which makes us successful.
Do you still code? Do you still like develop the product?
I would like to, but I'm not allowed to. So I was coding the very first version, and I mean, it's even not a secret that as a CEO and founder from a startup, one of your first responsibilities is to hire people who are better than yourself. Yeah. And I think the first 8 or 9 people we hired were software developers. And it was easy for me because I was a software developer as well. So it was a clear requirement in the hiring process. You need to be better than I am. And when you have 10 people in a company who develop code better than you, it's very, very quickly you understand you should stop coding. you don't make it better. So no, I'm not coding anymore.
All right. That's like a very common question. I don't remember one founder on the podcast who said, yes, I do.
But I would like to be open. I would love to. Yeah. And sometimes a little bit jealous of this cool, nerdy tech team who is allowed to code and celebrate party and yeah, have fun. But I mean, for me, it was a really, really cool transition even to go more to the commercial side. So currently I'm focusing much, much more on customers and partners and the market need. And now we realize that we have some gaps in the company for product communication. So that's kind of, I don't like the idea of the founder mode originally, so that the founder is always super deep in everything. But what I like is to understand where do we have issues and then jump to this issue, try to solve it, and then try to get other people on top of this issue and then move out again. And currently it's the alignment of product communication. We have a kind of a little bit of gap. So this is where I'm jumping right now in.
Okay, that's a good point. So to your previous answer, because you said you have to be kind of ahead of the market and ahead of what could happen in a couple of years. How do you make the hypothesis, and how do you make the bet of like what could happen? How do you prepare for it?
It's talking to people and don't believe. That is kind of this. If you talk to people and believe the first thing what you get as answers, or at least in my situation, I was super confused all the time because people are telling so different things about what they need and what is the next big thing and where their trust is coming from, et cetera, et cetera. But time after time, you learn to ask the right questions and kind of filtering the answers to understand, oh, wait a minute, this could be really a big thing. And if you identify a big thing from one part of your customers and you directly address the other part of your customers, then you can understand, okay, I mean, everything starts with the need. And I mean, there are some things you need to be super careful in when talk with customers about the future. I mean, if you talk about, or if you ask, do you want to have this feature? Nearly everybody says yes. Nobody says, no, I don't want to have this feature. The question is, would you like to pay 1,000 euro a month for this feature? Then you get better answers. Which feature would you prefer, A or B, something like that. So if you learn to ask the right questions and if you learn how to guide customers to share their insights with you, and then if you get 10 times the same insight within 3 days, then it makes click and you understand, oh, there could be something where we should invest more time to it.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes sense. So what are, you know, potential customers looking for coming to Gentest? And especially now, since you've got competitors at this point, especially those that are trying to get away from what they use now, or you are winning them in some way?
It's not a clear answer I can give to you, because something what we have realized at the beginning of this year is that currently we are addressing kind of two segments of the market. There is the innovators, as we call them, or if some other books are calling them this segment, and they're really searching for better data quality. So they do a lot of innovational things in their market stack, in their market teams. They try to be kind of first movers, and they would like to use new technology to stay ahead. And this is working perfectly for us. So everybody who's searching for a better data quality and know how to monitorize the better data quality is the perfect customer for us. I mean, super quick sales cycles and it's kind even adapted prices super easy, because we can go to the customer and say, look, you will make 1 million more out of it next year. We ask for 10% of that one. So even the pricing, we are in the return of investment software case, that's easy. What we've learned last year is that more accidentally, we addressed kind of the early maturity, so part of the main market stream. They are so bigger companies, they heard server-side tracking is the new black. We need to jump on server-side tracking, but not really with a use case behind it. So when I'm asking, what is your expectation of server-side tracking? More or less the answer is that we have server-side tracking. So it's not really clear what is the use case, how they make money with it, et cetera. And this is, I would like to say, the whole market is searching for better data quality, but that's not true. A part of the market is searching for better data quality, and part of the market is searching for a solution like server-side tracking just to tell their management, we have server-side tracking in place, so we are super modern. And what we've learned at the beginning of the year is that this part of the market, these customers, they are not looking for technology to stay ahead, but they're looking for technology of not falling behind. And that's a huge difference for us. There's a huge difference in the whole idea of how to address the market. It's a different pricing. It's different messaging. It's much more about you're safe. It's easy. It's secure. It's not a wrong decision. While we need to find now ways how that we can communicate differently to the innovators, where we would like to say it's brand new, it's cool, you will have an advantage. Maybe it's not super secure for you, the decision, but if it fits for you, then you're the hero in your company. So that is one of our challenges, that this market for us is now so splitted. Challenges is the daily life for a founder.
Absolutely, yeah. So who benefits from server-side tracking the most?
Marketing. I would say marketing, because these guys really need data. There is, from my perspective, there is today no marketing without data. And if you have, bullshit in, bullshit out. If you have bad data, then the marketing output would not be comparable and compatible with your neighbors. So marketing departments, especially performance marketing, they're really searching for solutions to get a better data quality.
Okay. And something that I read on the website and maybe on your social media as well is that now you are AI powered as well. And I was wondering, were there any concerns from the customers for, kind of integrating their sensitive data with AI? And were there any concerns on your side as well? Because, with AI, I think something that founders really try to figure out is that, is it AI for the sake of AI, for the sake of like new and customers, like you said, customers really want that new feature, or is it really like great value that is added to the main product?
Yeah, I would say no, our customers do not show any concerns. The only concern I personally have is that I really hate this term AI. It is confusing so many people so much about what's exactly is behind. What we have done in the past 2 years regarding AI, or let it phrase it more correctly, machine learning, that is that was exactly one of these moments when I was talking with many customers, and where in 1 month I got nearly from all sides the same feedback. It was when we could close more and more banks to use Gentis, and they shared with me that they have big concerns of their consent rate. So more and more people do not accept the cookies and the cookie banners, et cetera, et cetera. So they told me, Thomas, it's cool what you can do with Chantis. I mean, it's so important for us to increase the data quality. But if we're talking about only 40% of the data because 60% of the customer are not giving consent, then the value is getting smaller and smaller. So two things what I realized in this moment, the one thing is, oh, there is really a need out there that we can solve this issue. And the second one is it is directly a risk for our business case, because as long as we are only bringing value within the consent area of user, then we are there is a huge dependency on consent management and the legal situation in Europe, and as we know now more even in the USA and in other parts of the world. So we said, oh, okay, we need a solution for that. And we experimented a lot in this area. How could we solve that one? And AI, machine learning models were the solution where we are recalculating now non-consent user. So it's not that we track the non-consent user, even if it is not allowed, that would be not a solution. That would be a high risk for our customers. But we track some data from the non-consent user just for the purpose of recalculating it to synthetic users. And we're using a lot of data from the consented users, and the output is a new synthetic user who never existed in the real world, but can be to 91% similar to the non-tracked user. And that's a huge new technology we can now use for this whole non-consent user area. And that is where a lot of AI technology is inside working for Chantis to find out how to calculate this user and to make the calculation, the mathematics behind. But it's not about, I mean, I think we should really make a difference between using AI technology. So, I mean, we could even say we are AI powered by just implementing a large language model to Chantis for the user interface. That was not our way. We really, it's kind of the hard way to start on zero. So we had to work together with mathematic guys from the university. We had to find out which model really fits to our purposes, how to optimize it. We had then a lot of data scientists joining the project. So really creating kind of new AI technology for recalculating the non-consent users. So that is where I am kind of brave enough to say there's really AI insight developed by us. It's not only a ChatGPT clone for our user interface.
Oh, right. That's pretty cool. Okay. How did it change your pricing?
We don't know. We are in the middle of finding exactly that out. So there was a multi-level plan of go to the market with this new technology. The first one was proof of concepts and pilots and finding out if this really works, where we had this final confirmation in July last year that the technology is working and that it's really bringing value. So the first step was, oh, we can recalculate this synthetic users, but can we even activate these users in the advertising systems? Because this would be the big thing. And in July, we had nine proof of concept with nine of our customers and really tried it with Meta advertising and Google Ads advertising. And we found out that we really can improve the return on ad spend by 25%. So there's really a value. And then we started to reach out to our existing customers and said, there is now a new feature, MVP status. We have no idea what we should ask for pricing, but please use it. And we will talk about the pricing. Just use it. And you will find out that there is a value behind it, because we have good customer relationships. We can even talk about pricing after they started of using it. So we tried to learn based on our existing customers what could be the price. And then, as always, something new comes to the party. Like, we realized that we have a blended market we are addressing right now, the innovators and the early majority. And obviously, our customer base is very much on the early, on the innovator side. So we've learned based on our customers what could be the price for the innovators. But we have currently no idea what could be the price for the early majority. So that is something where in kind of exactly right now, this is one of our main challenges to find out the adapted price for the early majority customers. So for the bigger customers, bigger enterprise customers, etc. So open answer is we don't know.
Okay. In a nutshell. All right. Well, thank you for, you know, kind of explaining the bigger picture. But, and you know, I had a question, kind of a follow-up here. I'm not even sure how relevant it is at the moment after your answer, but I'll just shoot it anyway. You know, because you're a sales led and you're talking to your customers and you're kind of, you know, you're doing mostly outbound in your conversations with the potential customers, like the fact that you have AI or, you know, machine learning, did it make it easier? Did it make the sales process, did it make it easier? Or, you know, did it shift maybe your potential customers into like being more curious about it? Like, I'm just, you know, I guess the question here is like how the fact that a company has AI anything basically changes the perception of it and like the desire of a customer to own it.
This episode is sponsored by Rewardful. Looking for new ways to find customers for your SaaS business? Consider building an affiliate program. Rewardful is the easiest affiliate tracking platform to set up, manage, and scale for SaaS companies. Building a successful affiliate program can be a little bit intimidating at first, and that's why Rewardful has taken what they've observed from their most successful customers' affiliate programs and distilled that into an exclusive online course. The exciting part? Their affiliate marketing course is absolutely free. Start the course at academy.rewardful.com. Academy.rewardful.com. And turn your biggest fans into your best marketers.
Yeah, I don't think so. So the new feature helped us a lot in the selling process, but not because it is titled as AI. This helps us a lot more top of funnel marketing, but in the sales process, it's kind of everywhere is AI inside in the meanwhile. So it's not kind of a differentiator. If I'm going to an opportunity, so somebody who's already went through the nurturing process, did some webinars with us and really is motivated to understand the value of Gentis and to buy it. If I would say, look, there is AI inside, the answer would be, of course. I mean, where not? So on the sales, and obviously Gentis is not cheap, so you need to invest money to be allowed to use Gentis. A customer really needs to understand the use case and why they should use Gentis and how they can get back the money out of the license costs, for example, by doing better performance marketing, etc. I would say the idea of that we say AI-powered or AI inside, however, is more helping us to get the first click on top of funnel, to get people interested in joining a webinar or joining a masterclass on an event. I think that everybody has a need and they say, oh, I'm not super happy with my current tracking solution. And here I get 4 offers and there is kind of AI inside. Maybe I should join this masterclass because maybe this is kind of a little bit more advanced, but it's really a top of funnel thing, I would say, and lower funnel and mid of funnel, it's really, it needs to go down to the real use case.
Yeah, absolutely. Makes sense. So my next question is also about the fact that you landed on sales led, and I'm curious how you landed there. Is it because, you know, the product is complex? Is it because the tickets are that big and, you know, kind of just by the nature of it, customers who pay more need a bit more of handholding? Like, how did you get there?
I would say it's a combination of many things. So the first thing, yes, the product is complex, especially in the nurturing. So when you need to explain the value of the product and the license costs, it's not fully automatically. I would say this is the first one. The second one is the ticket size. If you ask for 3, 4, 5K a month, nobody wants to use the credit card and pay after 10 minutes of reading some documents. But I would say the main reason, based on the history of the company, was that in our very first moments of trying to sell the product, we realized that we had a huge risk in churn rate because we were not close enough to our customers after the signature. So, and we said, okay, how should it work if we try to make a long tail model out of it and product led growth or sell it via website, credit card, whatever? How should we be so close after signature when we were not close for signature? And that was one of the main reasons why I think why we moved to a sales led approach, because we learned that, I mean, everybody knows if your product is not really used, and if you're not in the infrastructure case, like you're selling firewalls or something like that. But in our case, we are in the return of investment case. And if our customers are not using the product, then there is no return of investment. And latest, after 12 months, they understand, okay, we paid very high license costs. We didn't manage to get the value out of it. We didn't manage to get the investment back, or hopefully more. So we churn. And we've learned that we need to be close on our customers, account manager, solution, success manager, more architecture, helping hand of how to use changes to get the investment back. So it was, even after signature, a high touch model. And that was the reason why we said, okay, if we want to do a high touch model after signature, we need to ask for a certain amount of money. And that means a high touch model even before signature. And that was, I would say, the main reason, or the moment in the history when we realized and understood that that's the way how we can be successful.
All right. And did your experience with an agency kind of help, you know, with establishing that process and establishing the relationships and then doing the high touch strategy?
Yes, and I would say that is one of our second big challenge currently, that we have overseen that one a little bit in the last 2 years. So we are we're working very close together with agencies, more on the implementation side of the product, more on the technology side of the product, but we have overseen how big the impact is on the commercial side. We always said you cannot really trust agencies for selling the product, because agencies, they do not have sales departments. That means it's super hard with agencies to get a sales forecast. And, you know, for a startup, it's super important to have a stable forecast to be able to plan. And that's super kind of not possible with agencies, if you don't talk about the super big agencies. But if we talk about this 100, 200 people agencies, it's not forecastable for us. But we have overseen that one. That was a mistake in the past 2 years, that we didn't invest enough for agencies, and especially for the commercial impact of agencies. And it's not always of bringing leads or closing deals. We have kind of a reseller model in Chantis, but it's not far away of being the main part of our business. But what we have learned is, obviously, implementing a tool like Chantis and dealing with the main data of your business, you as a customer, you need a high level of trust. So if a customer knows me, for example, for 2 months, it's nearly impossible to build this level of trust. And obviously, there is an agency in place. They're working since 10 years, maybe, with this customer. So everybody knows each other. There is this level of trust. And if there is one single negative word about the solution of Chantis, the deal is lost, right? And that is what we're trying to correct now, to repair now, to have more commercial agreements with agencies, to even to put back the commercial advantage what we have if somebody is paying a license, that we just pay more provisions, lifetime provisions, etc. So this is something what we are correcting right now, but I think it's super important in our business, and to be open, we have overseen that.
All right. Very interesting. And something that you said is, you know, we need the forecast and we need the predictability. And I just had another episode with a founder who we talked with about the fact that a lot of startups, when they're going into scale up, they realize, oh my God, like we don't have that. We don't have the predictions. We don't have the forecasts. We don't have like basically processes established. And that's a bit of a pain. And you start feeling it before you start implementing this. So how did it work for you? Like, did you kind of start implementing processes earlier than you needed to make sure that it's a quick and painless transition into scale up, or how did it work?
I think we did everything and nearly everything wrong. It was, if you implement the processes too early, you're getting too slow. if you implement processes and structure too late, then it's chaos and the numbers are not correct and you're, for example, not predictable. We did both. On some sites, we implemented processes too early. We were super slow. We correct that one and said, oh, wait a minute, we are 60 people. It's not necessary to have a super sophisticated HR system, salary system, for example. And then there were, for example, more on the funnel management. We understand now that we implemented processes maybe too late. So we had some kind of chaos last year and we want to correct it now. So, I mean, it's always, I mean, everybody knows the Lean Startup book and it's always about really learning, doing something, act fast, decide fast and learning from your mistakes. And I mean, a second thing, what I can share with you, which was kind of a game changer for me, there is one investor out there, and I don't want to make any advertising for investors, but I need to cover this one. There is Ox, O-X-X, and they have written a white paper, and this was a game changer for me as a founder. And by the way, Ox is not invested to us. And this was about go-to-market fit. And with this white paper, I mean, you know that I was a software developer, so I really like to have kind of systems I can use and something what is logical. And this white paper is make it super clear that there are three steps you need to implement. The first step is you need to have product market fit. As long as you do not have product market fit, you don't need to focus to anything else because nothing will work without product market fit. So there is a very clear understanding after reading this white paper of how do you understand that you have product market fit, really on numbers. So which churn rate you should expect to be sure that you have product market fit, what reactions of customers, if you ask this question, you should get these answers, etc. And one mistake I think many founders are doing is to jumping from product market fit to scaling. And I did exactly the same mistake. After our Series A, a lot of cash on the bank account, you're super motivated. I mean, the first time that really real venture capital companies putting money to you, trusting you, and you think, okay, now let's go, right? I mean, now you have the money, now you spend the money. You hire 30 people and you do... The world is ours. And this white paper makes very clear that between product market fit and scaling, it's a huge important step in the middle, which is go-to-market fit. You need to find your go-to-market fit. And there are really very good described certain steps of what you need to deliver and what you need to achieve. Something like adapted price, something like you need to have your funnel metrics under control. And many, many things you really can make kind of a checklist to understand, oh, now we have the product market fit and we have the go-to-market fit and now we're ready to scale. And the idea of this white paper, if you scale too early, you're burning so much money that at the end, either you fail or you will be a kind of small merger with somebody else who did it right. So that was for me a game changer, reading this Ox white paper of go-to-market fit and to understand what we need to do and what we need to achieve before we scale. So, yeah, and there is an open question all the time when to implement processes and structure early enough, but it's as late as possible.
Okay. All right. And I think all the marketers that just heard your answer are like, oh, okay, people actually read white papers. Let's let's do more.
read. Well, whatever, books, white papers, talk. Yeah, that's one of the most important sources.
That's a great point. I actually, can totally second that. All right. Well, thank you so much for being, you know, so open and honest about your experience. I just have a couple more questions. They always appear on the podcast. So first one is, what's the biggest win and the biggest failure? Like, what stood out for you?
Yeah, I think first of all, important is there is never the one big fail and the one big win. There are a lot of fails and a lot of wins, and hopefully there are more wins than fails. I would say one of our later bigger fail was exactly this, that we have overseen how important agencies are for our commercial framework. So that was kind of a big fail. There's not one agency we lost, but we understood that others in the market did a much better job on that one. On the big win, just even sharing customer names with you, and but big win, as I already mentioned, was synthetic users. This is kind of our killer feature right now and really brings us uniqueness and urgency to the market. And I think one of the, or maybe I can share two customers which were super important, even in combination with synthetic users. The one is the Washington Post. So we closed the deal with the Washington Post in 2023. And that was two things why this was so important for us. I mean, come on, it's the Washington Post. That was just the reason for celebrating. But it was our first big US customers, super important for us because we know that US is our target market. And it's a huge publisher on the US market. And my personal background was always e-commerce and more on the advertising side. So it was important for us to understand, oh, wait a minute, we have a value even for publishers. This changed a lot for us. And the second big win for us is the XXX Lutz Group, the furniture retailer, one of the biggest e-commerce retailers in Europe. And they're really using kind of everything, all the features at Gente. So they're fully implemented using a lot of tools, a lot of different languages, a lot of different websites, even app tracking and web tracking. So the Lutz Group is super important for us.
Okay, those are great wins. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
So yeah, the last one is always about a hack. And that can be anything. That can be growth, that can be partnerships, that can be, you know, implementing AI, communicating it to your customers. So anything that works for you and you're willing to share.
I mean, yeah, what we are, and I would like to share with you always the kind of newest stuff what we're trying out. And as I shared with you already, that we have currently a challenge now for alignment of the product value and product communication. And something what we're trying right out now, and I can share with you that one. Wait a minute, I have one here. That because product alignment is really an all hands thing. It's not enough that 10 people of the company know what is the product value and can communicate it. You know that everybody needs to know what is the product value. Everybody needs to be able to communicate that one. So what we, and because of scaling needs means more people, more hands. And it's not that easy to find decisions with 60 people. And we experimented a lot about how can we find good decisions even with 60 people when we are in an all hands room and all hands meeting. And something what we implemented is are these cards here. You can see it. So whenever we have a question in a bigger room, in a bigger all hands meeting, it's very important that the decision cannot be found because everybody fully commit. This is kind of not possible with 60 people. But what we have implemented is to say, and everybody has these cards in his hand or her hands, that we say, either you can say, I agree and I fully commit. Or you say, I have concerns, but if all others commit, I will stand behind this decision. Or I have really strong objections. I think we should not go this way. I would like to continue the discussion. So this single card was a huge hack for us to be in a position of making discussions more broadly and even more important to find decisions more aligned.
Okay, that's pretty cool. I am going to steal that if you don't mind.
that was my hope. That's the reason why I'm sharing.
That's good. But, you know, I was listening to you as you were describing it, and I was like, oh my God, what is it going to be? Like, please don't let it be a magic 8-ball or something. this is not how you're supposed to make decisions. But yeah. Okay, that was fun. But yeah, thanks so much for sharing. I think that's a very good way of doing it. And it kind of reminded me of, you know, it's a bit of a different use case, but I was talking to a founder who was telling me about the process that they implemented for better communication in the company and just kind of being like making sure that communication is happening and everyone is willing to communicate even. And the thing that they did, it's kind of like the cards, even with the colors, you had to say what color of basically the mood and the communication style you have today. Like if it's red, oh my God, please stay away from me and maybe Slack me tomorrow. But if it's green, come on, let's do this. So that just,
great,
yeah. kind of reminded me of that. But yeah, thanks so much for sharing. And thanks so much for the story. Like I said, very open and honest. Really appreciate it. Lots of learnings here. And yeah, thanks for your time.
Thank you. And very welcome. It was a lot of fun.
Great. Same here. And I hope we get to do it again sometime.
Of course.
Thank you, Thomas. And take care.
Thank you.
That was yet another awesome conversation on SaaS Unbound. We're always looking for new guests to share their experiences. We mostly talk with bootstrapped SaaS founders, and if you're one, reach out to me directly at anna@saas.group or find me on LinkedIn. If you're not bootstrapped or even not SaaS but have a great story to tell, we want to hear from you too. And obviously, SaaS Unbound wouldn't be possible without the SaaS Group, a founder-friendly private equity company that buys awesome businesses that people love to take them to even greater success. If you're thinking about selling your company or just exploring your options, feel free to visit saas.group, fill in the form, and expect a response in under 24 hours.